Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. And folks, it's now or never. And actually, that's exactly what Thomas Jefferson and James Madison felt in 1798. I mean, if you look at what they did, they stood up and said, this is it. We don't accept this. We don't. You were never given unlimited power. You do not have the discretion to choose what you want to do. We delegated to you those few specific powers, and that's it. And so they understood that. And when we start going through this, and when we, I'm telling you folks, when you really place full context to what these men did, then I'm here to tell you that we actually have a path forward, that we go to the states and the state legislators have the authority as a collective, as the union, to basically determine what to do. Do not let these legislators consider ever giving the federal government an amendment to allow them to administer domestic matters, to allow them to meddle in anything domestic. And so we're far better actually creating, you know, a much better strategy and a much better cooperative amongst the states and leave the federal government outward facing. We don't want an entity that can bridge between making deals and, you know, basically giving itself the opportunity to position itself for greater power. That's what the federal government has been doing. That's where Woodrow Wilson was finally at the peak of the mountain of aggrandizing powers by the federal government, to where he tried to create a League of Nations. And then later on, FDR with the United Nations being integral in doing that. I mean, it wasn't somebody else's idea and these guys came, oh, well, that's good. They were a part of a collective effort to assume powers and authority over all nations, to create a new nation of nations, a new world order. They had tried twice. You know, they say the third time's the charm. And so they didn't want to fail again over this UN, because the UN just doesn't do it. So they know they need to go down a new path of doing something different. I was going to say completely different, but anyway, I don't want to take up too much time going down rat holes or anything else. But I'm here to tell you folks that when we look at what these men did, and as we go through the analysis coming up here, I think you will have an assurity that what Thomas Jefferson and what these other men did in tandem with Jefferson and Madison, these state legislators and so forth, we should be amazed at how well they understood what they did. Actually, we shouldn't be, maybe. But bottom line, you know, the ink was still kind of drying on the Constitution. It was still well within their, you know, their memory cells to go, this is what we said, this is what we're supposed to do. The problem was that they didn't write it down. They didn't, you know, maintain visibility to the ratification debates with all the other states joining the union and so forth. And therefore, what we ended up getting was a shifting and a sliding of the government towards more and more general powers and assuming more control over, literally today, it's every facet of our lives. I don't know what they're not. I mean, they're regulating religion. They're regulating everything. Come on. Come on, folks. What's it going to take? If not you, then who? If not now, then when? Anyway, so as I kind of finished off the list of crimes and everything else out of the Kentucky resolutions, because clearly yesterday I told you, Jefferson told you, what four crimes that the federal government had the jurisdiction of defining and punishing. That was it. Everything else that they're calling as crimes today, they don't have the authority to call those out as crimes. So treason is one of them. he did mention treason. But moving forward in the Kentucky resolutions, in resolutions 3 and in resolutions 4 and in resolutions 5, you'll find that these were, they basically was auditing, Jefferson was auditing these very specific laws, because in each of these resolutions, he identifies a very specific law that he was proving and how it violated, he was proving that it violated the Constitution and how it violated the Constitution. And so in Resolution 5, this is kind of interesting, because he also did this in Resolution 6. But the one thing I want to point out of Resolution 5, you need to read all of this. You need to read all of this several times, and at least until you really grasp what he's saying. But in Resolution 5, he makes this comment, and I'm going to read this whole the whole resolution. Resolved that in addition to the general principle as well as the express declaration that powers not delegated are reserved, another more specific or special provision inserted in the Constitution from abundant caution has declared that, quote, the migration of importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. What does that mean? That means that the slave trade gets shut down, and that means that the federal government now has full control over the policies of admitting anybody into any of the specific states. In other words, for 20 years, the states had the authority to manage their own immigration system and importation of people, blah, blah, blah. But in 1808, it ends. After 20 years, the ability to import slaves and the ability for the states to manage who comes in. So this is important, because today there are states like California that say we have the right to let illegals in and harbor them. All of the southern states are doing this because the federal government is rewarding them, and they have no idea how they are committing treason in doing so. He goes on and says in Resolution 5 that this Commonwealth does admit the migration of alien friends described as the subject of the said act concerning aliens, that a provision against prohibiting their migration is a provision against all acts equivalent thereto, or it would be nugatory, that to remove them when migrated is equivalent to a prohibition of their migration, and this therefore contrary to the said provision of the Constitution and void. So this one particular thing that he was able to find, because as he went through the Constitution, he these things jumped out, understanding what these things are. How important do you think it is to understand the Constitution? Because as you start going through it and as we read it and everything else, we can start finding, you know, this part of the Constitution being violated as well and in tandem with this, this, and this. Folks, I can't impress upon you that this wasn't just about nullification. This was all about interposition. Again, this was not about nullification. This was all about interposition and how these acts were violating the Constitution. So going on, in six, he actually does another dive into another act. And then in seven, he basically starts talking about, welfare, and starts talking about the general clauses, because he mentions the general welfare, or the defense of general welfare clause, and the necessary and proper clause, and you know these portals, and says, look, the federal government does not have the power in these clauses to be able to do or enact these acts. These are violations. And then in eight, this is where he really throws the hard punch, because now he really sets the tone as to the action forward. See, so far, these are resolutions saying you can't do this and you're violating that. And where in the heck do you assume these powers? And, oh, by the way, you're even violating this part of Article 1, Section 9 with this immigration thing by saying that the states can't do it when clearly the Constitution protects them from being able to do it. And so in Resolution 8, this is where he really lays out that we need to start acting as states. And what we need to do is we need to form committees of conference and correspondence. And in so doing, we will be able to work together. See, he didn't really call it a convention, but he called it committees of conference and correspondence, that we needed to start working together to come up with the necessary measures enforcing the federal government into compliance. And then we will deliver those measures to the federal government, and either they will comply or we will remove them. Because the Constitution gives them the ability to remove them. Because it's right there in Article 4 that the states have the power to charge anyone with treason and to extradite them, to pull them back from Washington, D.C., from the dark recesses of the evil, caverns. Anyway, that kind of goes with what Mason was saying during the ratification debate. So let me read this, but I don't have any time because we're going into break right now. So when we come back from the break, I will read the 8th resolution, so that you kind of see exactly what he's saying and what's really important. Okay, so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so Resolution 8, here we go. Resolve that a committee of conference and correspondence be appointed who shall have in charge to communicate the preceding resolutions to the legislatures of the several states, to assure them that this Commonwealth continues in the same esteem of their friendship and union which it has manifested from that moment at which a common danger first suggested a common union, that it considers. See, the common danger is from within, folks, today. it was an external, so it was just obvious. But most people, oh, well, it's not an external threat, so, you know, let's let it go. Are you kidding me? Anyway, that it considers union for specified national purposes, and particularly to those specified in the late federal compact, to be friendly to the peace, happiness, and prosperity of all the states, that faithful to that compact according to the plain intent and meaning in which it was understood and acceded to by the several parties, it is sincerely anxious for its preservation, that it does also believe that to take from the states all the powers of self-government and transfer them to a general and consolidated government without regard to the special delegations and reservations solemnly agreed to in that compact is not for the peace, happiness, or prosperity of these states. Now, I'm going to stop right here. And I'm going to point something out here, folks, because when he talks about this concept that they're, you know, trying to transfer, what he's saying here is to take from the states all the powers of self-government. Well, these four acts, is they didn't create a Department of Transportation and Education and Housing and all these other things. But he still considered these all the powers of self-government. Because once they've broken through this breach, they will do anything and everything else that they believe that they can do. And so it was now or never, as far as I see this, the way he was relating to this. And so he goes on and says, and that therefore this Commonwealth is determined, as it doubts not its co-states are, to submit to undelegated and consequently unlimited powers in no man or body of men on earth, that in cases of an abuse of the delegated powers, the members of the general government being chosen by the people, a change by the people would be the constitutional remedy. I'm going to stop right there. How many people remember Jefferson's, you know, quip where he says, you know, that the tree of liberty needs to be renewed or refreshed by, you know, the spilling of blood every 20 years, the spilling of blood of tyrants or something like that. I'm loosely quoting something, but most people cite this all the time. When Jefferson made that comment, it was before the Constitution. It was before these resolutions. So even though he is, you know, going, you know, high, extreme, and hard at this issue, he's not calling for a revolt. He's not calling for the spilling of blood, because he understands we have seized all of the powers necessary and laid out a government that gives the states the power over the federal government. And so he goes on and says, but where powers are assumed which not have been delegated, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy, that every state has a natural right in cases which, when the compact to nullify of their own authority all assumptions of powers by others within their limits. Now, this is the one time the word nullification is mentioned, but it's not mentioned in a context to what the state would have to do. What he's talking about is he's not asking for the states to actually nullify. He's asking the states to work together to provide the measures forward. The whole point, and we'll get into this later on, but the whole point is, even though a state can nullify, the only way they can legitimately nullify something is they have to leave the union, because you can't ignore what has been basically asserted upon the union, whether it's right or wrong. You can't ignore the fact that you can't do it by yourself. This is why he was calling at the very top of this that they needed to call committees of conference and correspondence to work out this resolve and these measures to get the federal government into compliance. Okay, so that without its right, they would be under the dominion, absolute and unlimited, of whatsoever might exercise this right of judgment for them. That nevertheless, this Commonwealth, from motives of regard and respect for its co-states, has wished to communicate with them on the subject, that with them alone it is proper to communicate, that alone being parties to the compact and solely authorized to judge in the last resort the powers exercised under it, Congress being not a party but merely the creature of the compact and subject to its assumptions of power to the final judgment of those by whom, for whose use itself, its powers were created and modified. So I'm going to end right there because he goes on a little bit more. But the point is he's basically saying that the states need to, if they're going to get rid of this, they actually have to exert the political power to have collectively nullify or to interpose and basically put these laws or these acts, just the biblical term would be asunder, to wipe them out, to destroy them. And so this is really, if you understand the tone of what he's saying here, folks, he's just waking up the sister states to say, look, we have this authority as parties to the compact under the fundamental premise of contract law. It is our decision to do these things. What the heck happened? I mean, most people, when you look at contract law, they kind of understand who the parties are and who the sub-element or who is derived or created from the compact. And the federal government is derived and created from the compact. They weren't created prior to the Constitution. The Constitution, with the authority of the states, created the federal government and gave them very specific powers. And so this goes on, and it ends up at the very end of this section. It goes like this: that this Commonwealth does therefore call on its co-states for an expression of their sentiments on the acts concerning aliens for the punishment of certain crimes herein before specified, plainly declaring whether these acts are or are not authorized by the federal compact. And it doubts not that their sense will be so announced as to provide their attachment unaltered to limited government, whether general or particular, that the rights and liberties of their co-states will be exposed to no dangers by remaining embarked in a common bottom with their own, that they will concur with this Commonwealth in considering the acts as so palpably against the Constitution as to an amount to an undisguised declaration that the compact is not meant to be the measure of the powers of the government, but that it will proceed in exercise over these states of all powers whatsoever, that they will view this as seizing the rights of the states and consolidating them in the hands of the general government, with a power assumed to bind the states, not merely as the cases made federal or caucus federalis, but in all cases whatsoever by laws made not with their consent, but by others against their consent, that this would be to surrender the form of government we have chosen and live under one deriving its powers from its own will and not from our authority, and that the co-states reoccurring to their natural right in cases not made federal will concur in declaring these acts void and of no force, and will each take measure of its own by providing that neither these acts nor any others of the general government not plainly and intentionally authorized by the Constitution shall be exercised within the respective territories. So, in the bigger picture here, folks, when we start understanding the limitations on the federal government and we start understanding what these men were really spelling out, we can start to grasp, how these states actually have this authority. Now, let me put it to you this way. Had the Constitution been derived by the people, and the people at that time voted for the Constitution, and they were the final arbiters and not the states, then we would have a real problem, because those who ratified this Constitution in 1789, those people died in 1790 and 1791. Those people died. The brilliance in the design was that the state legislatures, which were perpetual entities, were the ones that had the authority over the Constitution. And that's why we don't want, because the reason we're in this mess is because there are people today that say, well, I don't accept the Constitution. Well, it's not yours to accept. It is really the state's to accept. We have an obligation as citizens to support and defend it against enemies, foreign and domestic. So if you start understanding this whole concept of why the state legislatures are the ones and not we the people, you start seeing the brilliance. We'll be right back.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
I'm hoping you understand the real significance of just this one act, because who was Thomas Jefferson at the time? Well, Thomas Jefferson was Thomas Jefferson, but actually he was the Vice President of the United States. And so as the Vice President, him actually coming out and saying what the federal government just did, would, because they basically just passed this law that said you can't speak out against the federal government. In other words, he was putting himself in jeopardy of actually becoming, you know, a Benedict Arnold as perceived. And had they been able to squelch and quiet Jefferson and put him away and arrest him and basically discredit him. I mean, the way we manipulate people today by creating this era and manipulation to where this, you know, he never would have recovered from this. Wow, just think of what would happen. What would have happened? So I think he understood the magnitude of what he was doing. This is one of the reasons why it wasn't until practically his death or after his death it became knowledgeable to many that Jefferson actually did this. This is why in 1834, Madison actually included Jefferson in talking about this. That's why we're going to get into the notes on nullification of James Madison of 1834. So, hoping that as we lay this out, I'm hoping that this is really going to make a lot more sense. Now, when we look at the Kentucky resolutions, this was really the audit, the kickoff of the audit. And basically, Jefferson laid it out there to say, hey, you know, the federal government can't do these things. You know, we'd never bought into an unlimited government. And every single one of these laws violated the Constitution this way or that way or another way. And so he went through a thorough legal audit of the compact and said, this is how you're violating our compact, which is what Republic Review does. The audit is a big part of this. And so when Madison comes along and Jefferson talks about, you know, these concepts of what to do. He even brings up the point that we need to leave the Union because nullification, for a state to nullify, again, would mean that they would leave the Union, which I'm telling you, had Virginia and Kentucky left the Union, look at them geographically, they would have created a severance between all of the southern states and all of the southern territories of the United States. How would people get from Maryland? How would people, and as a matter of fact, how would people get from any of the northern states down to the southern states? They would have to, the only way to go would be travel by ship. If they would have left the Union, it would have been hostile to the Union. And so this is one of the reasons why I think he included the concept of nullification, because Madison talks about this in Federalist Paper, I want to say 48, where he talks about if any line in the contract is violated, the entire contract is violated, which means the parties can then leave or walk away from the contract. But it's up to the parties to do so. But clearly, he was talking about not walking away. He was talking about coalescing the states to enforce and force the federal government into basically obliterating these laws because they had no authority to do so and follow up with fundamentally, you know, a decommissioning of anything that was created because of these laws. Now, the next one, just to kind of clarify what we got here. Now, Jefferson was the vice president. In 1798, where was Madison? Madison was at home. He wasn't involved in government at the time. He was at home and, you know, at Montpelier and all of a sudden, you know, when this July 14th, these resolutions came out, or I should say these acts came out, and Jefferson wrote this, what we'll call the, and I think it was at the end of October, the Kentucky Resolutions. There, I can tell you that Madison and Jefferson talked and talked and talked what to do and how to do it. And then Jefferson initiated the Kentucky Resolutions. While that was going out to Kentucky, Madison started moving and started communicating with the state legislatures. At that point in time, Madison walked into the state legislatures in December timeframe, and they worked through Christmas Day, if I remember correctly. So let me scroll through this because I believe that they actually sent this out on Christmas Day. Nope, Christmas Eve, December 24th, or what the pagans called Christmas Eve, because they didn't call it Christmas Eve back then. They didn't call it Christmas. They didn't even recognize the holidays. So anyway, this is what Madison says, and this is what he does. And so I'm going to actually read all of this because most people have a hard time going through Jefferson's audit. But when you walk through it, you're going to see how he audits this. This right here is more of a schooling of dissecting responsibilities of the states, constitution, and so forth. And this is very powerful, the most powerful being the third resolution. So, resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States. and the Constitution of this state against every aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former, warranted by the Constitution. That this assembly most solemnly declares a warm attachment to the union of the states, to maintain which it pledges all its power, and that for this end it is their duty to watch over and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of that union, because a faithful observance of them can alone secure its existence and the public happiness. Number three, third resolution, that this assembly doth explicitly and preemptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting the compact, as no further valid that they are authorized by the grants enumerated in that compact, and that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, listen to this, folks. This is what he says. The states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. But the general government doth also express its deep regret that a spirit has in a sundry or a variety of instances been manifested by the federal government to enlarge its powers by forced constructions of the constitutional charter which defines them, and that the implications have appeared of a design to expound certain general phrases which have been copied from the very limited grant of power in the former Articles of the Confederation were the less liable to be misconstrued. So he's already stating one of the things that, you know, most people didn't realize is that the Constitution, much of the language came from the Articles of Confederation, so as to destroy the meaning and the effect of the particular enumeration, which necessarily explains and limits the general phrases, and so as to consolidate the states by degrees into one sovereignty, the obvious tendency and inevitable consequence of which would be to transform the present republican system of the United States into an absolute or at best a mixed monarchy. I mean, come on, that's, I love how Madison does this, because he's really creating what I call shock value. Because, I mean, monarchies, it's kind of like, you know, after World War II, the common sense of the word Nazi in Europe and even in Germany. I mean, it was like, wow, it was a trigger word, you know, and every German did everything they possibly could to shed. And, you know, I am not a Nazi, because it was so horrific of what they did. I mean, it was an absolute embarrassment of the German people of what the Nazis had done. So it's the same thing here, basically saying, hey, you know, we're basically on a path of becoming a monarchy. Creating, some people could call it hyperbole, but he was really looking at more of a consolidated, and actually I've said it too, I've even called it a monarchy. We have the kings and princes and dukes and duchess, you know, all of these different people at different levels of government. It kind of makes the same thing. It creates this elitist status. Oh, you were this long-term legislator in this state or commissioner. Seriously, folks, when we look at how we look at our government people today, I mean, most people look at Camelot. When I say Camelot, that references a royalty. So who's that? Oh, well, everybody knows Camelot, that refers to the Kennedys. Same thing with the Clintons, same thing with the Obamas, same thing with the Bushes. There are people out there that, you know, go, oh, you know, and romanticize these men and women and make them far more than what they are. They were public servants. Even George Washington didn't want to have any of that stink on him or his legacy. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so it looks like we might be able to actually get this up or get this done in this remaining segment. So let's just go ahead and try to do this. Resolution 5, that the General Assembly doth particularly protest against the palpable and alarming infractions of the Constitution. In the two late cases of the Alien and Sedition Acts passed in the last session of Congress, the first of which exercises a power nowhere delegated to the federal government, and which by uniting legislative and judicial powers to those of executive subverts the general principles of free government, as well as the particular organization and positive provisions of the federal Constitution, and the other of which acts exercise in like manner a power not delegated by the Constitution, but on the contrary, expressly and prohibitively forbidden by one of the amendments thereto, a power for which then any other ought to produce universal alarm because of its leveled against a power which more than other ought to produce, leveled against that right of freely examining public characters and measures and of free communication among the people thereon, which has not been justly deemed the only effectual guardian of every other right. Now, some people say the Second Amendment is the effectual guardian, but the freedom of speech is, remember we talked about Alex, right? Alex Jones. And so they're talking adamantly how important it is to preserve the free communication and that expression thereof. Resolution 6, that this state, having by its convention which ratified the federal Constitution, expressly declared that among other essential rights, quote, The liberty of conscience and of the press cannot be canceled, abridged, restrained, or modified by any authority of the United States, close quote. And from its extreme anxiety to guard these rights from every possible attack of sophistry or ambition, having with other states recommended amendment for that purpose, which amendment was done in due time, annexed to the Constitution. It would mark a reproachable inconsistency and a criminal degeneracy if an indifference were now shown. Let me restate that. And criminal degeneracy if an indifference were now shown to the most palpable violation of one of the rights thus declared and secured, and to the establishment of a precedent which may be fatal to the other. Because these acts actually also included that you couldn't print in papers, political speech and those types of things. So remember, the First Amendment protects the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, so forth and so on. And they're standing up saying, you can't do this, government. And the fact that the government actually of Connecticut has reached down into Texas to sue Alex Jones for his speech. Come on, folks. Are you connecting the dots here? Number 7, right? Resolution 7. That the good people of this commonwealth... I'm going to go down a quick rat hole. I can't believe the incompetency of lawyers today because they don't understand the Constitution, and I don't think they clarified the historic value of how this was supported and constantly supported. We may have wandered away from that, but that wandering is unconstitutional. The freedom of speech cannot be abridged. Anyway, yeah, it's one thing if it's for public safety, like yelling fire and somebody gets hurt. Resolution 7, that the good people of this commonwealth, having ever felt and continuing to feel the most sincere affection for their brethren of the other states, the truest anxiety for establishing and perpetuating the union of all, and the most scrupulous, i.e. honorable, fidelity to that Constitution, which is the pledge of mutual friendship and the instrument of mutual happiness. The General Assembly doth solemnly appeal to the like dispositions of the other states in confidence that they will concur with this commonwealth in declaring, as it does hereby declare, that the acts aforesaid are unconstitutional, and that the necessary and proper measures will be taken by each for cooperating with this state in maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties referred to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, he was basically re-quoting the 10th Amendment. That the governor be desired to transmit a copy of the foregoing resolutions to the executive authority of each of the other states with a request that the same may be communicated to the legislatures thereof, and that a copy be furnished to each of the senators, representatives representing this state in the Congress of the United States. So I thought it was interesting that he included Congress, but I thought it would have been better that he didn't. That, you know, I think Madison erred on being as, you know, open as possible. But I think what he needed to do, because, you know, Congress is going to find out. And I wouldn't have made a point out of notifying them so that they could take, indifference. There's an exception. So that they could look and say, you know what? He didn't include us because they want to work in the recesses, creating, I would say, a level of fear and a level of anxiety on part of the federal government. And what's the federal government going to do? I mean, you got to understand, Madison now stood up after somebody stood up in Kentucky. And now we have the father of the Constitution basically calling out these other states. So they had to create a orchestrated effort by these other states to basically take a stand against the Constitution. Again, These were Federalists that were doing this. Again, I told you, this is 1798, 10 years after the ratification debates were occurring, 9 years after the formation of this new government. And what we see, this is the first year of Adams' presidency. And so what we're seeing is this huge, or, well, maybe it was the second year, but anyway, the point being this, that when we look at, you know, this stand against the federal government, and we look at, you know, the way these states responded, I told you folks that the cabals of the states, the anti-federalists who wanted to consolidate and maintain their little cabals, their fiefdoms in their states. Well, guess what? They made it into the federal government and they created this symbiotic relationship with the states, and now they created this national cabal of trying to assume more and more power instead of maintaining limitations on power. This was done and basically agreed to by the Senate on December 24th. So in other words, they closed this resolution and sent it out on Christmas Eve. And so I'm sure there was a few horse riders that, you know, started going up and down the coast. And just remember, in December, you know, driving or riding a horse up to Massachusetts was a pretty chilly aspect. But back in those days, they did it. That was what they did. They lived in that austere environment. You know, I was talking about energy and what we have to do today, you know, compared to having to go cut your own trees and split your logs and to be able to, you know, fuel your own fire, your own heat, and those types of things. Back in those days, some of the most important acts of welfare was ensuring that those people in a very harsh winter had enough firewood to get through the winter. So those who had more, you know, tended to lend to. And the worst, the sign of absolute destitute, you know, or destitution, whatever the word is, the sign that actually proves how destitute a person has become is when they have to start disassembling their barn and their other sanctuaries that they've created on their property just so they have wood to burn to keep themselves warm. Folks, we're facing that today. And as a matter of fact, we can't use wood anymore. We can't go and disassemble a shed because our government has put us in a position of controlling us to say, you can't even burn fires anymore in your house. There are more and more states that have passed laws that if you did not have a wood-burning fireplace, or if your home was built after a certain period in time, you cannot have a wood-burning fireplace and you cannot have a wood-burning fire because they have become Gestapos in dictating how you heat your home and how you live every day in your home. Folks, we're looking at these resolutions as like, you know, wow, these are big steps for these great men who understood the Constitution. In contrast to today, what the heck has happened? Seriously, why have we allowed it to get so far? And it is rapidly falling off the precipice. We've got to stop. We have a chance to save ourselves. And if we don't act now, then if we don't start acting, I mean, it's going to take a miracle already. Let's not press the Lord to do it all himself. Let's actually give him the joy that we did what we needed to do while we were here, while we can. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm
regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.